It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Fierce fighting between Boko Haram militants and the Nigerian army. Southern African countries to send observer mission to troubled Esotu. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Fierce fighting reported in the northeast Nigerian city of Bama, with soldiers trying to repel an attack by Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Military sources who spoke to journalists in Maiduguri said 30 militants were wounded and another 70 killed. There was no immediate word on casualties for the army. The city located about 70 kilometers from the Borno state capital, Maiduguri. Southern African countries say they'll send an envoy and observer team to Lesotho following the unrest that prompted Prime Minister Thomas Thabane to flee the country for South Africa Saturday, claiming the army had launched a coup. The military surrounded its residents and the top police official and then disarmed two police stations in the capital. Officials from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, made the announcement Monday in an emergency meeting in Pretoria with Mr. Thabane, his rival Deputy Prime Minister Motejoa Metsing, and several other officials. They agreed to a timeline to end the suspension of parliament, a key demand of rival parties. Motebeli Kapa, professor at the National University of Lesotho, says a planned Monday protest demanding an opening of parliament was supposed to have taken place organized by the opposition.
There is fear, I believe, on the side of the prime minister and his party, that if parliament gets opened, the members of parliament would pass a vote of no confidence against him and then probably have a change of government.
Analyst Imfo Motsamai of the Pretoria-based Institute of Security Studies told VOA a coup didn't occur, but soldiers were reacting unlawfully to the firing of their commander, raided police stations and surrounded the prime minister's home in order to intimidate him and force him to change his mind. This is VOA News. A U.S. defense spokesman confirmed Monday the United States conducted an operation using drones against the Al-Shabaab militant network in Somalia. Rear Admiral John Kirby said U.S. officials are assessing the results of the operation and would provide additional details when and if appropriate. Sunday, at least 11 people were killed after Somali security forces repelled an attack on a prison housing Al-Shabaab militants in the capital, Mogadishu. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for that attack that targeted a prison run by Somalia's National Intelligence and Security Agency. In Nigeria, there's been a third confirmed case of Ebola in the oil hub of Port Harcourt, bringing the number of cases in the country of Ebola to 16. Onyebuchi Chukwu is the country's health minister.
One case of Ebola virus disease, a third degree contact, is being treated in Rivers State. Two other contacts of the late Port Harcourt doctor, that is, one of the doctors who managed him, and a pharmacy technician working for the doctor, are symptomatic. They are under quarantine.
He said 200 people remain under surveillance in Nigeria. Meanwhile, the head of the World Bank, Jim Yong Kim, writing in the Washington Post Monday, denounced what he called the world's disastrously inadequate response to the Ebola outbreak. The virus has killed more than 1,500, mostly in West Africa, since February, with more than 3,000 confirmed cases. The World Health Organization is turning its attention to Senegal, a tourist and transport hub, which reported its first case of Ebola on Friday, a man from Guinea who came to stay with relatives near the capital, Dakar, last month. Kristen Roby reports on public reaction.
At this busy market in Dakar, there has been a rush on bleach and soap. Some pharmacies in the capital are rationing hand sanitizer, one bottle per customer. Senegalese say they are taking preventative measures like hand washing seriously. This man, Mohamed Sanya, says, I am scared because I don't know this disease, and it is the first time in Senegal. And he says, now we are living with those diseased people, so this causes a big problem for authorities to help people to stay well. Along with concern has come some criticism that someone who knew he had been exposed to Ebola and was under health surveillance would travel to Senegal. The Senegalese government says it is monitoring people who may have been in contact with the man for signs of illness like fever or vomiting. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Dakar.
The French press agency reports Liberian nurses at the nation's biggest hospital, John F. Kennedy, went on strike Monday demanding better pay and equipment to protect them from Ebola, where nearly 700 have died, including 10% of those health workers. I'm Victor Beatty reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, the second day of September, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Southern African countries to send an observer team to Lesotho following an apparent attempted coup.
The message which we have consistently been sending is that they should become and they should resolve their differences through a democratic and through governance structures which are in place.
Stergomena Lawrence Tax is SADC's executive secretary. Are there South African troops in Lesotho? We'll have an analysis. Mali's government and Tuareg rebels engage in more peace talks. And there's increasing talk among Liberian diaspora for an interim government to replace President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
There's a growing call for Madam Sirleaf to resign. And then the question is, if Madam Sirleaf resigns, what next? Do we have an interim government, or do we have a trusteeship, or do we have the vice president, Dr. Boakai, to take over?
Senor Nyangwale is the Secretary General of the Movement of Liberians Against Corruption. Kenyan women save money and time with return to natural hair, and internet and technology offer new tools for journalists. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Southern African countries say they will send an envoy and an observer team to Lesotho following an apparent coup attempt over the weekend. Officials from the Southern African Development Community, NUA SADC, made the announcement Monday during an emergency meeting in Pretoria with Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Tabani and several other officials. SADC Executive Secretary Stergomena Lawrence Tax tells reporter Peter Clotty the regional group has also called on the parties to resolve their differences through democratic means.
Our position is that whatever is happening there should be resolved amicably following the rules of fatherland. And SADC, we have been dealing with the matter for I think about 3 months now when we started mediating the situation through the former chair of the organ, President Pohamba, President of the Republic of Namibia. And there were a number of things which we agreed upon according to the Windhoek Declaration. What we are doing now is to bring the leaders together. You know, the challenge may be what is that people do not understand and have not had it being discussed. Lesotho is in a coalition government for the first time, where three parties came together and they formed a coalition government. So agreeing on a number of issues is always a challenge when you're in a coalition government. That has been the major issue which needed to be addressed.
When will SADC officially bring the disagreeing parties together to resolve this tension so it doesn't spread up again?
We have done so because this is not... We had about 3 meetings. There was a mission which was sent by the chair of the organ. I don't recall well, but I think it was in May. And then the mission was also followed by a mission by His Excellency, the President, the chair of the organ, by then the President of the Republic of Namibia. And the three leaders had a meeting with the chair. And the meeting I'm referring to, which took place on the 30th July, again was a meeting under the chairmanship of the chairperson of the organ, President Pohamba. Again, the three leaders were there together. And what was agreed, there are issues which we agreed upon. First was to remove the prorogation of the parliament, and then the deputy prime minister was also to disengage from the new agreement he had entered with another party, now making the coalition party fragile or weak.
What will be SADC's message to the people of Lesotho, especially when there was this confrontation, the situation is tensed? What is the message of SADC to the people of Lesotho seeing this skirmish?
The Prime Minister, let me start from there. The Prime Minister did not run away from the country. The Prime Minister said categorically that he had to go to South Africa just to be in a neutral place where he can reflect and he can also engage with the chair. But the message which we have consistently been sending is that they should become and they should resolve their differences through a democratic and through governance structures which are in place. Anything which will go outside the governance structures, the rule of law, will not resolve what they are trying to resolve. That has been our message, and that is the message I'm conveying to them.
Strogomina Lawrence-Tax is SADC's executive secretary. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Botswana's capital, Gaborone. Slohan Lesti is a political scientist with the National University of Lesotho. He says the situation in the capital, Maseru, is anything but normal, as the army appears to be digging in.
It's very tense in that we are not exactly sure of what is happening. I mean, we are not sure of who is in control as we speak, because the prime minister and his coalition partners are reported to be in South Africa holding talks under the leadership of President Jacob Zuma of South Africa. But officially, there hasn't been any communication to the public as to who is in charge. So sometimes you hear from different radio stations people talking. Sometimes it is from the ADC, that is the Prime Minister's party, and from the Basotho National Party. Sometimes you hear statements being made by people from the Lesotho Congress for Democracy. So we are not really sure who exactly is in power. But according to Lesotho protocol, the most senior minister is supposed to be the one who is in power now.
Slohan Lesti is a political scientist with the National University of Lesotho. He was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Martin Rupia, executive director of the African Public Policy and Research Institute, says it appears South Africa has soldiers on the ground in Lesotho.
I think to a certain extent there are some boots on the ground. Although people would like to see dialogue and a political solution, you know, being arrived at. But certainly we gather, you know, from newspaper reports, there were forces in Ledibrand, which is a town near the border, that was able to deploy special forces and pull out the prime minister just before, his house was attacked. But to then deploy forces against the military force, which he has refused to, accept, you know, political authority, I think SADC is thinking twice.
Lastly, what impact would this have on the region, economic-wise?
Well, Gauteng, part of South Africa, really gets its water from Lesotho. So that may make an impact, if sanctions are imposed or if people decide to blow up, the Katse Dam.
Monte Rupia is executive director of the African Public Policy and Research Institute. He spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe Service. Tuareg rebels and Malian government officials met Monday in Algiers to try find common ground for a lasting peace in northern Mali. Talks focused on security and politics, including the question on how to govern the huge territory. Katerina Hoje has more for VOA from Bamako.
This week, armed groups from northern Mali and government representatives returned to the Algerian capital, where they will engage in talks aimed at finding a solution to the country's nearly three-year-old crisis. In July, the parties signed a roadmap that would pave the way for talks on a wide range of political and security issues. Independence for the north is no longer on the table, as Tuareg rebel groups seek autonomy rather than a breakaway state. However, it is unclear what autonomy would mean, both in terms of Bamako's role and how communities that are split along ethnic and tribal lines would govern the vast and sparsely populated territory. Rebels see decentralization, such as an outsourcing of government functions to local representatives under Bamako's watch, as a solution that has been tried and failed. At this point, it is absolutely essential to reach an agreement, says David Gressley, the humanitarian coordinator with MINUSMA, the United Nations mission to Mali.
Without it, there will be really no stabilization. There will probably be deterioration in the security situation. And that's not in the interest of any of the parties that are at these talks.
Mali has been unstable since Tuareg fighters launched a new insurgency at the start of 2012, an event that triggered a coup in Bamako, a takeover of the north by Islamist militants, and the intervention of French and African forces in early 2013. Armed groups, some of them with links to drug trafficking and terrorism, still fight for territory in the north, threatening not only Mali but also neighbouring Algeria and Niger. Hundreds of thousands of Malian refugees remain in camps in Mauritania and Burkina Faso. In addition, Malians are becoming increasingly fed up with France's military operation Barkhane, a region-wide counter-terrorism campaign. Gressley says both the government and rebels may be ready to work out their issues.
Hopefully we'll make a definitive difference, because that's what everybody is saying that they want, is a definitive agreement for the north of Mali.
An agreement, if reached and implemented, would end 50 years of armed conflict between the Bamako government and various Tuareg separatist movements. Katrina Hoye for VOA News from Bamako.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, the second day of September, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. There's been increasing discussion among the Liberian diaspora, particularly in the United States, for an interim government to replace President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Those supporting the idea say Liberia has become a failed state under Madame Sirleaf's leadership. They say her 9 years in office have been characterized by lack of quality development, including a workable national health care system, which they note is responsible for the government's poor handling of the Ebola outbreak. A senior government official who preferred to be anonymous said if anyone has a problem with the government, they must wait for the next election. Seyo Nyanwule is Secretary General of the Movement of Liberians Against Corruption. He says Liberians both at home and abroad cannot afford to wait.
Yes, there is a discussion about transition after Ellen, because what is clear is that there is a growing call for Madam Sirleaf to resign. And then the question is, if Madam Sirleaf resigns, what next? Do we have an interim government, or do we have a trusteeship, or do we have the vice president, Dr. Boakai, to take over? So yes, there is a high-level discussion taking place within the Liberian community about the transition of Madam Sirleaf.
Who are the notables? Who are the people behind this call for the president to step down?
Liberians in the Bible shop, Liberians in the beauty salon, Liberian in churches, Liberian in the communities, Liberian just having the conversation, people talking about what is happening in the country. And everybody settles on one thing. Biden said he has failed. I mean, that is the common denominator. But how we move forward is what the discussion is now. We should never go back to the war in that country, never again. And we should never allow people who don't mean well to come, you know, at the helm of government in that country, never again.
If there is the concern that the president is not doing well, according to what you're saying, then why not wait until the next election? Why talk about forming an interim government?
Let's be clear for the record. Malin said he has failed. To even think about waiting one more day, I think it's more harmful to Liberia than it is now. It's in the primary and supreme interest of Liberia if Malin said he resigns, because if Malin said he does that, it helps the country to move forward. So whether she does it voluntarily or involuntarily, she has to make that determination. She has to make that call.
What do you say to those who will tell you that the mere fact you're talking about the government should resign in the wake of this Ebola outbreak probably shows that you don't care about the sufferings of Liberians now?
To those who think that way, let me say to them, first and foremost, that God bless the souls of our people who have died Ebola disease. And to those who are struggling to survive Ebola, may God help you. It's our prayer that God help you, not just in Liberia, but in Sierra Leone, in Guinea, and also Nigeria now. It's our prayer and hope that they do their very best to take good care of themselves and let them know that we are praying for them. Having said that, it's also true that our people need to know that we shouldn't use Ebola as an excuse, because before Ebola, our country was in a mess. 9 years of failed leadership of Madam Sirleaf, that's the fact. 9 years of doing nothing. All Madam Sirleaf did was to travel around the world. So we shouldn't use Ebola as an excuse. We shouldn't allow Ebola to be an excuse to allow Madam Sirleaf to go another 3 years. Just one day of Madam Sirleaf in Liberia as president is more harmful to Liberia than we have. So we are calling on Liberia to take the more high ground.
Seyo Nyanwule is the Secretary General of the Movement of Liberians Against Corruption. He spoke with me from the Midwestern U.S. city of Minneapolis. In Kenya, salons are filled with women who spent hours to have their hair done. It's also expensive in a country where half of the population live on less than a dollar a day. For some women, that has come to that has that has come at too high a cost, and now they are embracing their natural hair. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
22-year-old Monica Omaitha works in a salon in downtown Nairobi. Despite specializing in creating weaves and wigs for her clients, she keeps her natural hair.
I decided to go natural because I'll be myself.
I decided to go natural because I want to be myself. I don't want to perm my hair or put weaves because I want to be myself with my natural hair. She says she finds it pretty easy to maintain and cost effective.
Natural hair is ikoni cheap kulingana na kuweka
chemicals. Maintaining natural hair is cheap as compared to putting chemicals or weaves or anything that is not natural on my hair. After years of complicated style being in fashion, many Kenyan women are embracing a simple look. 25-year-old Alice Nanette says she wants to feel appreciated in her own skin and for her natural look.
It's very easy to maintain natural hair because, one, you don't really think so much about if my hair looks bad, because you can really maintain it. I don't like weaves because I just find them being too plastic. So natural for me is the way to go.
Molly Musioka is a trichologist dealing with hair treatment and scalp problems. He says one reason why women are disillusioned with vague hair products is they find them hard to use properly.
Most of our women have been frustrated with the products that we have in the market. Some of them being very good products, but being misused at the salon. So they end up giving hair damage or even scalp burns. And again, there's also the issue of right now everyone in the world is scared of cancer and you do not want to expose yourself to a lot of chemicals. So there's also that notion that if you keep natural hair, you will be in a position to use natural products.
Whether natural or highly styled, the hair care business in Kenya is a multi-million dollar industry. Benson Kimemia says a return to a more natural look has not hurt his salon business.
Nili penda ku nini ku inspire wase na kuwasaidia ku.
He says he started his salon to inspire people to have the best natural hair, including dreadlocks. He says more and more people are going natural as compared to a few years back because people have seen too much chemical damage. They know natural is gentler and God-given, so they are embracing it. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The internet and rapidly evolving technology is quickly changing how people receive news and how journalists deliver it. There are now more ways to tell a story than ever before. One school in Los Angeles is teaching the next generation of journalists with the help of a state-of-the-art newsroom. Elizabeth Lee has this report.
You learn how to tell a story well, and maybe that's your area of expertise.
When Faith Miller wanted to study journalism in college, she never expected this.
We begin with breaking news.
I did not expect that in school I would be reporting on real stories, and I did not know how much work goes into it.
Unlike their counterparts of past generations, students at the University of Southern California Annenberg School of Journalism learn to deliver news across all platforms, including television, radio, and the web. And that's not all, says Willow Bay, director of the School of Journalism.
But today, we expect journalists to be able to use all sorts of technological tools to research stories, to vet that research, to analyze that research. We expect them to be fluid in multimedia storytelling skills. We expect them increasingly to be their own marketing and distribution arms, to get their stories in front of audiences and to spread those stories as far as they can.
They learn all that in this brand new media center, the newsroom of the future, where student journalists who work on TV, radio, and the web sit side by side and collaborate. They also have to be tech savvy, and that means learning basic computer programming languages.
They need to know how the web works and be able to tinker with it.
Digital journalism professor Robert Hernandez demonstrates some of the cutting-edge web tools reporters can use to tell stories in a different way.
You can do 360 panorama through your phone, right? We can talk about what a tornado looks like, how it rips trees out of the ground. Through their phone, there's an app to kind of stitch that together.
Take a picture.
Students can also take a class that experiments with Google Glass, a device that connects to the internet and records video and audio. Will Fetterman is a print and digital journalism student.
I think we're entering a market now where if you don't have kind of a wide range of skills and have a little bit of knowledge of everything, you're probably going to have a difficult time finding a job.
The goal is not just to prepare students for the real world, but to also make them technologically savvy, so as technology evolves, they can also adapt quickly.
That was VOA's Elizabeth Lee reporting. Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Burundi's defending champions Urunani beat hosts Kenya Port Authority 68-59 to retain the Africa Zone 5 Men's Club Basketball Championship title in Mombasa, Kenya on Sunday. In an all-Ugandan encounter, City Oilers edged Power 71-67 in the bronze medal playoff. Meanwhile, the women's final featured an all-Kenyan encounter in which the Nairobi-based United States International University outplayed Kenya Port Authority 63-28 to win their first trophy at an international event. Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority beat Burundi's Berko Stars 69-61 to claim third place. Turning to volleyball, South Korea beat Tunisia by 3-1 at the World Men's Volleyball Championships in Katowice, Poland on Monday. China triumphed over Egypt 3-1 in Gdansk. Earlier on Sunday, Australia outclassed Cameroon in three straight sets. Today, Tuesday, Africans seek their first win at the championship when Cameroon challenge Venezuela in Warsaw. Moving on to football, hosts Zambia beat Sudan 3-1 in a friendly match played in Lusaka on Sunday. Elsewhere, Egypt pipped their Kenyan visitors by a solitary goal in Aswan. Today, Niger play Uganda. In women's football, hosts South Africa overpowered Tanzania 6-1 in Polokwane, while Egypt beat their Jordanian visitors 2-0 in Cairo. In Rwanda, each player in Rwanda's national team, Amavubi, will receive over United States dollars $5,500 for advancing to the group stage of the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. The Rwanda Football Federation Secretary General Olivier Mulindahabi revealed in Kigali on Monday. The Amavubi will earn the bonus despite the Confederation of African Football disqualifying Rwanda from the Nations Cup campaign over fielding an ineligible player. The gesture appears aimed at pacifying the players who may be demoralized by the latest development. Still in Kigali, Rwanda's Amavubi coach Steven Constantin confirms he will stick with his team despite their Nations Cup setback. Constantin told the Kigali media that their focus now is on putting together a strong side for the 2016 Orange Africa Nations Championships, which will be staged in Rwanda. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Southern African countries say they will send an envoy and an observer team to Lesotho following an apparent coup attempt over the weekend. Officials from the Southern African Development Community, NUSADC, made the announcement during an emergency meeting in Pretoria on Monday with Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane and several other officials. During the talks, led by South African President Jacob Zuma, the participants agree on a timeline to end the suspension of parliament, a key demand of rival parties. That's it for this Tuesday, September 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Marco Woman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing everyone a very good day.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's the youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.